You're listening to Slice of Cheese with Jenny Linford on Food FM. Enhance your cheese board with Peter's Yard sourdough crackers this Christmas. Available at Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Morrison's, Ocado, Amazon, petersyard.com and specialist food retailers.
To find out more about Food FM and our content, go to foodfmradio.com.
Hello, welcome to A Slice of Cheese, the Food FM radio series that celebrates the world of cheese. I'm Jenny Linford, a food writer and cheese enthusiast, the author of Great British Cheeses. Cheese is a delicious and fascinating food, and we're setting out to explore this remarkable food and share the stories of the people who make, sell and love it. Episode 6, Cheese Board Fun. How does one go about putting together a cheese board? Acclaimed cheesemongers Andy Swinsko of the Courtyard Dairy and Patricia Mitchelson of La Fromagerie share their expertise. I talked to cheese blogger Tania Darlington, also known as Madame Fromage, who tells me about her imaginative approach. Cheese and crackers are a classic combination. Claire Stiles of Peter's Yard tells me why their sourdough crackers work so well with cheese.
Online, on smart speakers and on Listen Again, this is Food FM.
Enhance your cheese board with Peter's Yard sourdough crackers this Christmas. Available at Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Morrison's, Ocado, Amazon, petersyard.com and specialist food retailers.
This week on A Slice of Cheese, very happy to welcome back an old friend of the programme, Andy Swinsko of the wonderful Courtyard Dairy in Yorkshire. Good morning, Andy.
Morning, Jenny. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm really happy to be back talking to cheese people again, my favourite pastime. This week, Andy, we're looking at something which is a perennial theme, and I guess it's something that you get asked about a lot in your shop, which is the sort of the making of a cheese board. How do people put together a cheese board? And it's something that people always seem to want advice about. Is that something that you find in your shop?
Yes, and it's such a interesting topic, isn't it? Because I think there's no right or wrong answers, but it's great when you're in a cheese shop because you can help guide people through it and give them the right answer for that occasion and what they're doing. But for general advice, it's kind of nice to have some information in your back pocket to know what you're doing when you don't have that ability to speak to a cheesemonger.
That's a nice way of putting it. And are there a few sort of broad principles that you would sort of suggest to somebody?
Yeah, I mean the classics are really start with a hard, a soft, and a blue, hasn't it? That would be your kind of classic cheese board. I also think that there's regional variations in there as well. And also you've got to accommodate for what people are liking as well. You know, we always say when people come to us, and especially when they're designing gifts of cheese board and things like that, especially for Christmas and things like that, and we're sending them out, you know, it's very difficult to kind of get some idea about what the customer likes, because the classic is really, we look at maybe a hard, a soft and a blue, the original one being like cheddar, Stilton, brie. But if you know that person hates soft cheese, or you know that you're not sure on that person's cheese likings, then obviously you've got to tailor that to them a little bit, and you don't have to go for the hard and set rules. And we tend to stick to that hard soft blue rather than cheddar, Stilton, brie, so that you can have a bit of variance in there. That's one of the exciting things about British cheese that we've covered on lots of previous opportunities, is that you don't have to go for necessarily for the classic so much anymore. But if you get those different styles, different textures, different flavours, then you can kind of work your way through. And I always, especially when I'm doing a cheese tasting on a cheese board, you know, I tend to stick to a fairly minimal amount. Five cheeses, I think, is your top. I always think more than that, your palate tends to get confused.
Yes.
And you tend to, you know, you tend to lose the nuances. And also the smaller bits of cheese you get, the more they dry out, the more they suffer in your fridge and sitting there. So you'd rather have less cheese but in better quality, and then you can taste it and get an appreciation of what you're looking at.
That's an interesting point. So actually buying a bigger, you know, because cheese costs money, and everyone, you know, we're going to be watching our pockets with the cost of living crisis. So in a way, getting a bigger piece of cheese will keep better, then, you're saying. So, you know, fewer cheeses perhaps, but then they'll keep better because they'll be in a better condition.
Better condition, and better, because they won't dry out as fast. I think all those, we are a nation of liking little tastes, I mean, and liking to sample loads of different stuff. I think that is something that has changed in the last 15 to 20 years with the rise of things like tasting menus and things like that. And that's great, but actually I think if you really want to appreciate the cheese, less in better condition. And I actually think when you come to designing that cheese board, one of the key things for me is when you eat it, you know, and how soon you're buying it before you're eating it, because there's no point buying great cheese and letting it languish, you know, in your fridge at home. One of the things I always say is I compare cheese to a bottle of wine. You know, you wouldn't open a bottle of wine 2 weeks before you wanted to drink it. Now think about cheese in that same way. When you open a whole cheese, when you've got a cut piece of cheese, that's effectively what you're doing. A lot of those flavors within cheese are quite volatile and they'll dissipate like they will in a bottle of wine. And, you know, and so the sooner you, the later you open it, the later you buy that cheese, the better the quality, really. And I think actually when it comes to designing a cheese board, I think that is more of a key factor, is you want a bit of variance within taste and texture and different styles. Essentially, you know, really, if you're buying quality cheese, you want to make sure you buy it close to when you're using it, buy it in less pieces but more, and get it out a few hours before you want to eat it. I think that's as key to any cheese board designing, is actually the cheeses you put on it.
Yeah, nicely put. And obviously, I suppose one of the things in your, in the Courtyard area, let's say, you know, in the run-up to Christmas, is that something you have to, when you're talking to your customers, do you ask them, you know, when do you want to, when they're buying, do you say, are you when you plan to eat this? Is this one of the things that you have to do with your customers?
Yeah, I mean, we cook fresh from a block, and so we don't vacuum pack or wax. And I always, one of the things we have to hammer into the staff, that even if people are coming in November and early December for cheese, we don't want to sell it to them, because if we do and they get using it for Christmas, they're going to eat it in bad condition. And that's not what we're there for, you know. So we want to turn them away, really, and say, come back. And if you can't come back, go somewhere else that does good cheese, you know, or order online. Because buying it now for Christmas, when, you know, you want to be ordering, want to be buying for Christmas after the 15th of December, in my opinion, you know. And if you're buying fresh, traditional cut cheese, I think that's when it will be at its best. And if you're buying that quality cheese, that's what you want to sing, really.
And does that mean then that in that run up to Christmas, have your customers, have they got that message in the years you've been open, Andy? Have they understood that? And do they come in big numbers in that sort of 10 days run up to Christmas then?
Yeah, and it's a funny time, isn't it? So we actually encourage customers to, they'll get better service if they come in November, have a chat, have a taste and order their cheese. And then Christmas, they can just turn up and collect the bag. So it's kind of cut fresh, but chosen earlier.
Because that's a really nice way of doing it. Yeah,
so you get, I actually think that, I mean, most cheese shops will do a third of their business in that last week, if they're doing traditional cheese like us, in that last week before Christmas, and we do about that annual business, and that creates pressures on the business. So you'll actually, in my opinion, it's really nice because you get a buzz and it's exciting and we have cheesemakers tasting outside the shop, but there is a queue and I feel like you actually almost get better service in November and the rest of the year because there's less pressure on the customer with a queue behind them. And that's just a natural pressure, you know. It's not from the cheesemongers, but, you know, when you queue up for a long time and you get to the front and then you realise there's a queue behind you. I think that if you can choose your cheese earlier and then pre-order it and collect it, that's a great way to take the pressure off the cheesemongers, but also enables you to get a bit better service as well, because you can choose your cheese in November when actually cheese shops are quiet, you know. So it's you can have a bit more time with the cheesemonger themselves.
I always enjoy, I'm not surprisingly, you may be surprised to hear this, I think that I really enjoy that, the time, you know, a leisurely cheese shop, the time thinking about what I'm talking about with the person behind the counter and saying, oh, what do you like this week? What's good? You know, point me to something interesting, and having a chance to taste and to think about it. And to, that's not something that can be done if there's a long queue behind you, you know, because there won't be the time for that sort of experience, which is such a big, you know, it's one of the pleasures of shopping in a good cheese shop rather than shopping online, is being able to have that face-to-face interaction over a tempting array of cheeses.
When you're designing a cheese board, a lot of people will classify it into, for the French, you've got these eight families of cheese. So you've got like the fresher lactic ones. Now they're classic, like your goats of cheese, your fresh cheeses. And they're a great way to start a cheese board because they're clean, they're fresh, they're acidic. And then you've got your soft cheeses, which kind of break out into white rinded, Brie, Camemberts, you know, that style.
Yeah.
And washed rinded, the more pungent ones. And I'd probably start off with one from that section. And then your hard cheeses. Now I break your hard cheeses into three sections, what I would call traditional crumblies. From like Northern England, traditional hard cheeses from Southern England, like your continental styles, like sweeter, nuttier Comté Gruyères.
Yes.
And then you've got your blues as well. You're like your softer blues and your firmer blues. And so you can break it out into all of them, but you don't want to go too heavy in any section. So the classic is obviously a cheddar, Stilton, Brie, and that's where you start with maybe a couple of, and then put a wild card in. So a hard, soft, and a blue, and then I always think wild card of like something a bit different, a bit funky.
Yeah.
But I always say that, you know, that's your old stool cheese board, and that always works.
Yeah.
But why not try and look at different things? So we do a lot of different things in our shop. We do, number one, we do regional ones where you're having just a regional platter. Mm-hmm. Or number two, we do cheeses from one producer. That's really interesting, I always think. So you can do the same milk, same farm. And like Cote Hill's a great example. You can have their Linden, which is nice and sweet and supple. You can have their blue, and they do a fresh one, the Cote Hill White. And you can have a nice little cheese board from one producer, and that's kind of a nice talking point. And then we do a really interesting thing in our shop as well, where we do two different age profiles or two different maturation techniques from the same cheese. So we do like the Killeen Goatsmuck Gouda, and we do it at 3 months, and again another one at 12 months old.
Right.
And I think that's a really, such a difference. And actually focusing down on one cheese per cheese board and having that in great condition is sometimes as good as anything. You know, if you imagine a farmer's table, I remember those big cheese cloches, those huge cheeses. Yes. And you go into the farmer's table in the olden days, you know, my grandma, I can always remember, they had a big, just one piece of cheese under that cloche, and that was the local cheese, and they'd just eat that, you know.
Wonderful,
Actually, so there's loads of different ways to do a cheese board. There's no right or wrong, but, you know, I think sometimes those different ways, looking at regional, looking at producer, or looking at one cheese at two different age profiles, are kind of interesting talking points and something we have, when you go into a good cheeseman, we have the ability to kind of look at.
And also, I mean, you know, we talked about the classics, the cheddar, Stilton, Brie. But of course, you know, one of the exciting things is that there are lots of alternatives, aren't there? And if you wanted to support British cheesemakers, you've got lots of wonderful cheesemakers out there making really interesting cheeses that you could be, that are great, you know, that you could buy and introduce your friends to, your friends and family to.
Exactly. I think that's the exciting thing is, if you're a traditionalist and you want your cheddar and you want your Stilton, put one wild card in, you know, put one, you know, that different one, there's something different every year, and then that's something, and you'll find that it works really well, you know, and it's something different to talk about.
I was met David Jarrett the other week, and he's such a wonderful cheesemaker, isn't he? And he's got this range of, you know, really interesting. So he's got five cheeses, I think, in his range. And one of them, perhaps the one that he's best known for, is called Rollright, which has got a sort of spruce bark circle around it. And he's sort of modelling classic French cheeses and doing a British version of them. But he's just a very, his cheeses always say elegant, it seems to me. They got such a touch to them, you know, where they're not overpowering, but they're full of flavour, and they're very fine examples of that type.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if you're making a cheese board for yourself, that's a great example with David there, is that you can choose his cheeses all have a rich, not overpowering, not in your face kind of flavour. And they're absolutely fabulous cheeses, but they have a depth and complexity to them. And that is almost how you eat your cheese board as well, because if you jump in with a hard cheese that's really powerful before something like the Rollright, you'll lose that buttery, rich kind of clotted cream that just makes it absolutely fabulous. If you're making cheese board for yourself, you choose what you like. But when you think about other people, you know, I always find this in some cheese shops, that you can tell that they have a type of cheese that they like, because every single seems to be a similar style. And it's the same with a cheese board, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
You know, think about, not everybody likes the same thing. Think about putting those different, you know, those families that I talked about, the white and the soft and the crumbly and the hard. Think about putting examples in from there, because they don't have to be, you know, it's not just about you, unfortunately. Maybe you're in charge of the cheese board, but, you know, and what you don't want is five cheeses that are all the same, which you sometimes find, because, oh, I like strong hard cheeses, so everything's kind of similar.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And that's a very good point to start, you know, with the more delicate flavours and then work up, because, you know, it will affect, if you eat a very dominant cheese first, you know, then you might as well not eat the really mild, gentle one, because you won't really be able to taste it properly. So that's a very practical point to make. And so I was thinking of where you are, Andy. So you talked about the crumblies and these northern hard cheeses. Are they very popular at Christmas cheese boards in your Yorkshire shop?
Yeah, I mean, well, we sell an awful lot of cheese. It's a very old-fashioned tradition to have cheese and Christmas cake. So we're probably one of the few cheese shops that, you know, at Christmas sells more crumbly cheese than it does blue cheese. You know, as everybody else is buying Stilton, we're selling things like Lancashire and Wensleydale, because round Wales it's a tradition to have it with Christmas cake, and that's as much as anything. And I think we sell an awful lot of that.
It's a very nice pairing. Yeah, it is a delicious pairing, isn't it? I mean, it's like, yeah. And I think it's interesting, isn't it, that power, if that's what you were used to having, you know, from childhood, you've got the memories, it's that power of food, isn't it? Those foods that connect you back to your past, your childhood, to happy times, you know, to family, that bring back memories. It's a very, very potent, isn't it?
I mean, we were just talking about that in the shop the other day, about Christmas. And, you know, so I always like it every Christmas, because you see the same families as well. Part of their Christmas routine, because I always go, you know, you can pre-order and you can just come and collect. And they're like, no, this is part of our Christmas routine. This coming to the shop
that's
is
nice,
part of the routine.
It?
So it's not just the cheese, it's the experience of every year they come up and they choose their Christmas cheese. And there's quite a lot of people that do that. And that's nice, isn't it? You know, it's nice to be part of that.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's the joy of, I think,
important.
Yeah, I'm actually, you know, and the role that good food shops play in, you know, and Christmas is traditionally a time of feasting, isn't it? And the time when you, you know, you buy in nice food for the family, for everyone to enjoy, and all the shops are busy, which is sort of fun in that really nice way. Like, you know, my son, when he was at university, worked at Neil's Yardery at Christmas, and I said, if you can work at Neil's Yardery at Christmas, you can work anywhere, because, you know, it's so busy. So,
exactly.
You know, and just that, but it's that everyone's waiting with anticipation. So it's a very sort of good-natured waiting, you know, it's not sort of shoving and impatient. It's just like, you know, it's good. They know the people inside the shop are doing their best, and people are picking up food they like, and everyone chats to each other and is saying, what are you getting? It's rather nice, isn't it?
And so, I remember, like, we do, like, Neil's Yardery, we have from the 15th of December onwards, we have a cheesemaker outside our shop, a different one every day. So, yeah. You know, as part of that wait, you get to talk to that person who makes the cheese, and they come and talk along and taste you. And I remember when I worked back to Winkfield, they'd give out port and, you know, down the queue. And so it's quite nice. It's not just like a queue at an airport, is it?
Yes, it's part of the whole experience, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Lovely. Oh, well, thank you, Andy. Thank you so much for taking the time to come and give us your cheese board tips. It's much appreciated.
Anytime.
Online, on smart speakers, and on Listen Again. This is Food FM.
This week on A Slice of Cheese, very happy to have with me today someone who's been a huge influence in the world of British cheese and who's done much to introduce me to the pleasures of cheeses. And that is Patricia Michelson, founder of La Fromagerie, which is these wonderful cheese shops in London. Hello, Patricia.
Hello, Jenny.
Patricia, for this episode of A Slice of Cheese, we're sort of looking at the idea of cheese boards, which is something I think that people are always interested in hearing how to put together a cheese board. And I thought I couldn't really come to a better person than you. Tell me your thoughts about this.
Well, there's four different schools of thought, especially over the last few years as cheese has become more and more a focus and a vocal point in the course of the meal. But I have a very definite way of dealing with the cheese course, and it's one that I have honed over my 30 years in the business, which has been because I came in as a novice into the cheese world, I needed to find out and explore and understand things, because there was never anyone to ask these things. You would go into a cheese shop and just see a whole load of cheese and have no information whatsoever. So when I started, I wanted to have very clear tasting notes on everything that I was selling, but also to understand the progress of taste. Progress of taste in a, you know, with the cheeses as you navigate a cheese board. And that is really important to me. I know a lot of people like to go off piste and, you know, try the blue first and, you know, the mild one last. But to me, that actually defeats the whole object of understanding, getting more understanding of cheese and also the enjoyment of it. So for me, a cheese board should really be up to 7 cheeses. I like odd numbers. It's a bit like gardening.
Nice. You never put them
equal,
don't put twos. Yes,
you always, always do threes, fives, sevens.
Yeah.
So up to around 7. I mean, you can go more if you want, but 7 is the max as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. Five is usually what I aim for, but 7 is absolutely fine. And you always start with something with great acidity, because what you want to do is to neutralize your palate before you move on to all the different styles of cheese. So the best way of neutralizing your palate is something with good acidity, and good acidity is a goat's cheese. So that's our starting point. And our end point is the blue cheese, because the blue cheese encompasses everything else that you've tasted, from the acidity through the blue veins, the richness of the cheese, fruit, nut, and all the other flavours are all encompassed in a blue cheese. And that brings it together, because in your mouth, you've got all these different flavours that you've built up from tasting the different cheeses. And then you've ended with this glorious blue that brings it all together, and you have this sort of symphony of flavors going on in your mouth. But also, if you're drinking wine or whatever you're drinking, that has also had its own way of progressing and being part of the whole tasting process.
Wonderful. I mean, I know, yes, and you're very clever. I mean, I've eaten at La Fromagerie at various times over the years, and such good matchings of wine to cheese, very good pairings. You know, it's always very, I always notice that when I you know, go to one of your events. So starting from goat, ending with blue, and then in the middle, would you suggest that people then just, you know, would you suggest different types of cheese? You know,
of course, because then you go through the profiles. So you start with a lovely tangy goat's cheese. There's plenty of English goat's cheeses now that are lovely, from Golden Cross to Synoddon Hill to Brightwell Ash. You know, there's lots of them. It just depends if you want something that's lighter and nuttier, or something with that lovely sort of bright acidity. And I love Synoddon Hill or Brightwell Ash, for instance, are two cheeses from the UK. And Elric Log from Scotland, from Selina in Scotland, Errington. They are really wonderful for the palate as palate cleansers. I call them, they're like toothpaste. it's a cleansing your palate, which is what we want. And it really is good for your teeth as well. So you start off with that. And then once you've done that, you if you've got wine, you've tasted your wine tastes very fresh, a little bit racy. It tastes almost like sea salt sometimes as well, with that little saline quality, foamy saline quality coming in. So you want to, it's that has really whetted your appetite. It's made juices in the mouth. So you want to go on the next one. So the next one I would go for is probably something with a white bloomy rind. By that, I mean like a Brie, a Camembert, Baron by God, for instance, if you're talking about British cheeses. You can go Wickmore as well, British cheeses as well. So go for something with a little white bloomy rind. That little white bloomy rind is important because that houses also a lot of flavour. Cheeses ripen from the outside into the centre, not the other way around. A lot of people think, oh, it all happens in the centre of the cheese and then ends in the rind. No. Everything to do with cheese is about the rind. What happens outside, how it's looked after, how it's cared, what it's put on it, if it's washed or anything else, how it's kept, will determine how that cheese actually tastes in the end. So something that is very pedestrian tasting usually means that its rind is also rather pedestrian or hasn't been cared for, or it's not, you know, is not a rind that has had any production done to it to bring on the bacteria that you want to then go into the cheese, good bacteria, to then develop the flavour. So we would then go on to this bloomy rind cheese, which can be a soft one, like a Camembert or Brie, or it can be a slightly more fudgy, like a Chaos or a Briat Savarin, for instance. Lovely, rich and creamy, a little bit nutty. So that brings another element. So you had your little freshness to start with, and then you've got a little bit of nuttiness and also that bloomy rind coming through as well on your palate. And then you would go on the next one, you would have our semi-hard cheeses, ones that we call the semi-cooked style cheese, either a, for me, a Beaufort, for instance, or there's wonderful. Ashcombe that David Jowett has produced, but also things like the double barrel, the Lincolnshire Poacher double barrel. Now, a lot of people think that that's a cheddar, but it's the way that it's made, it nods, it actually tips its hat to Gruyère. Mm. And if you taste it, you'll see it has that lovely little chew to it, chewy fruit. So you've had the freshness to start with, and then you've got the bloomy rind, which is smoother and it has slight nuttiness coming from the rind, and then you're going deeper into it with the more richer, deeper textured cheeses. And then you can go to the next one, which could be maybe a nice big bold cheddar. So those are the sharp and tangy ones, which then picks up always on the other three that you've had before. And then you can then go on to the next one, can be a washed rind cheese. And those are the ones with the very high aroma, not necessarily strong in flavour, but it's the aroma And that's from the washing of the outside of the rind that produces this enzyme collaboration on the cheese to bring out those very high volatile aromas. And that has the aroma, but also within the cheese, it can be quite mellow and nutty and fruity and a little bit of sharp saltiness coming through. So it's picking up all the other cheeses, you see, as you're progressing through it. And then you can then choose something completely different to have for your sixth cheese. You can go off to another country and one of your favourite cheeses that you might have, whether it's, say, a Taleggio from Italy or a Manchego from Spain or from England, find a really lovely ewe's milk cheese, because the ewe's milk has earthy, sweet and fruity flavours, very different from cow's milk. And they have these deeper qualities of more in the way of farmy type aromas and flavours. When you think about things like venison or roast lamb, it always has that sort of nice oiliness to it, especially lamb. So that, as your sixth cheese, is absolutely perfect, because that will lead you into your blue, whether you're having a Stilton or a Harborne blue or one of the Errington cheeses, Lanark blue, with its strong spiciness. That little bit of spice will be in the ewe's milk too. And then that finishes off the whole thing. It rounds out the tasting by finishing with that blue. And you'll see that if you do it that way, you'll see how satisfying it is, and also how you're learning about the cheese that you're tasting, and you're seeing, right, oh, I really like that. I want to try that again, maybe with something else. You're almost learning as you're tasting and expanding, you know, your whole repertoire. Yeah. You don't just go for your favourites all the time.
Yes, think lovely. About, no, moving off. That's a beautiful, that's a really interesting progression. I like, it seems like a chord of cheeses then, isn't it? That as you amplify and you start with one and then the two, but they link back to each other, and then so you're building up. That's a wonderful image, actually, and a really interesting approach, Patricia. Yeah, I love that. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
Wonderful. So, well, I think it's lovely to have that insight from you, which I know, you know, all your years of experience, Patricia, learning, and then you share it very kindly with us in a few minutes.
Well, I don't only share it, but the people that work with me have to understand our approach as well. I mean, it's well honed over the years, but I think that what we've achieved, and I think others as well, what we've achieved is to give our customers and people who are a bit nervous about trying different cheeses the opportunity to actually explore it more and to be a little bit more sort of not afraid to actually go out there and find something else that is not the usual to then enjoy. If you can understand the progression of it and the taste profiles as you taste, you'll see that, you know, the sky's the limit. We have a room, you know, with 250 cheeses. We can keep you in cheese for the whole year, you know, and you won't taste, you know, the same one twice.
You won't get bored.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I think we're very lucky in the UK that we've got this huge amount of cheese now that we have to thank, you know, the specialist cheese makers for, you know, really helping small independent cheesemakers to be able to grow their business, but also to make cheese again in the way that we should be making it, you know, with raw milk and, you know, with their own herd, pasture. This is what we're all pushing for, pasture feeding, rather than in the barns eating hay. We want, you know, we want a more sort of rural approach into the whole way of doing dairy now.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of interesting things. And the cheesemakers I talk to are really aware of that and trying to explore it. And yeah, it's very exciting, isn't it? So that was a treat. Thank you. Take care then, Patricia.
Bye-bye. Lovely to
see you soon.
Take care.
I'm a huge fan of Peter's Yard's crackers, and they always feature on my Christmas cheese board.
All Peter's Yard's crackers are made in small batches using quality natural ingredients and their sourdough starter, slowly fermented for 16 hours for award-winning flavour and crunch. Visit petersyard.com/shop. Enter the code SLICEOFCHEESE at the checkout to receive 25% off your first order.
Online, on smart speakers and on Listen Again, this is Food FM.
Enhance your cheese board with Peter's Yard sourdough crackers this Christmas. Available at Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Morrison's, Ocado, Amazon, petersyard.com and specialist food retailers.
Before we go on exploring the world of cheese, here's news of another Food FM programme that I think you'd really enjoy.
Thank you, Jenny. Well, I'm David, the host of The Drinking Hour here on Food FM. Each week, we explore the wonderful world of wine, spirits and beer, all things that make wonderful pairings with cheese, of course. We hear from those for whom making drinks is a passion. So after your cheese course, how about you join me for a few drinks? You can find The Drinking Hour with David Kermode on your usual podcast platform and at foodfmradio.com. Now it's back to Jenny and a slice of cheese.
Well, this week on A Slice of Cheese, very happy to have with me all the way from America, Tanaya Darlington, cheese educator and author of the Madame Fromage blog. Hello, Tanaya.
Hi, Jenny. Thanks for having me.
No, it's lovely to have you on the show. And I was interested this week, Tanaya, we're sort of exploring the idea of a cheese board. You know, it's a very classic thing where I think people often want advice on how to put together a cheese board. But it strikes me when I was looking at your blog and at your post that you have a very sort of creative and rather fun approach to that subject. So I thought perhaps you could tell us about that.
Oh, sure. Thank you so much. Well, I feel like we're living in the age of the social media cheese board where you see all of these slices of cheese and little triangles and squares and cookie cutter shapes. But I do tend to love a cheese board with whole cheeses on them so that people can see the rind and cut off however much they like.
Good point.
So I feel a bit old school and like maybe I'm going against the trend. But people often ask me how to build a cheese board or what they should ask for when they go to the store. And so, Jenny, I do have a little advice I always dole out. And
a great
cheese board is three cheeses. One is your comfort cheese, one is a conversation piece, and one is something local or from close by.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, that is... Okay, so let's unpick that a little bit. So a comfort cheese, you said, was that the first
cheese.
One? Yes.
Exactly.
That's a nice phrase. And what do you mean by that?
Well, sometimes I feel like I go to the cheese shop and I want something I know, or I want something that reminds me of having cheese with my parents. So it might be, you know, a hunk of Gouda because my father loves Gouda and we would eat that together. Or it might be a cheddar, something really cozy. Again, something familiar. If you're hosting guests, it would be the cheese that they would for sure recognize.
Mm.
But then I think every great cheese board should also have a conversation piece. And this is a cheese that should flirt with you at the cheese counter. You should just become intrigued. And it's the cheese then that all of your guests will talk about later and say, oh, did you see that cheese wrapped in nettles? Or do you remember the cheese wrapped in bark?
Yeah.
Or the cheese that had the double layer of ash running through the middle. So it's something memorable, and it's maybe a cheese you've never had before. And to me, again, it's a cheese on the cheese board that will get everyone talking. And then I feel like it's always great to support one's local makers and also to welcome people with a cheese that's from the area or made close by. So that might be a local goat cheese, that might be a cheese from your local farmer's market, or it could be an opportunity to ask a cheesemonger, what do you have in that's made on a local farm that I could enjoy?
That's so interesting because, you know, you're absolutely right. Cheese, it's very interesting how cheese often stay, you know, they stay where they're made, especially when they're they're fresh cheeses, you know, which just don't, you know, can't really take being sent too far away because they will just, you know, they will just go off really. They're perishable and fragile. And you're right, all these places that you... So cheese has that wonderful connection to place, you know, of the foods we eat. It has that capacity to link us to somewhere special and be evocative. So I'm going to visit my my dad lives, he's English, but he lives in Tuscany. And when I go there, they've got a great, in there called the Mugello outside Florence, which is a very agricultural area. And there's this amazing pecorino shop, which has got
about sort of, you know, at least 10 different types of pecorino, which they make, and it's which is a that's a sheep's milk cheese. It's very, it's a very sort of classic Italian cheese. And so when I go there, you know, I eat pecorino, and it's that lovely connection to being to that place, really.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like so often people hear the same advice about cheese boards, which is to do a mixture of milks or a mixture of textures. But sometimes, Jenny, like you're describing, I think it can be wonderful to do a board where it's actually very similar cheeses and you're comparing them. So, you know, it could be a trio of pecorino cheese boards or an all sheep's milk cheese board or stick with Italian or stick with Tuscany. For me, I love a theme because I feel like it allows you to go off road and become introduced to something new and not just be eating, you know, goat, cow, sheep every time.
Yes.
I love to do simple,
yes,
you know, a theme. If you're traveling somewhere, we'll eat the cheeses of the place you want to go. Or if you have a friend I have a friend who he used to live in a monastery. So for his birthday, I did an entire monastic cheese board. Of just
brilliant. That's great. Because there's so many fascinating. You're right. I mean, there are all these, cheese is such a rich food, isn't it? And you're right. And there's a whole tradition of monastic cheeses. And what fun. I mean, so that must be, so in fact, do you sort of take cheese boards round to friends? You know, is that something that people would eat? Do they say, Tanaya, bring the cheese? You know, they'll go like, yeah, we want to be in your hands. Yes.
Exactly. In fact, I have a friend coming from Belgium to visit the United States for the first time. And just today in the car, I was thinking, what is the first cheese board I will make for him that features like some of the best American cheeses? What a fun little project. Some friends who are getting married and they're honeymooning in California. And I'm thinking, a set of California cheeses. I can't wait to give them something that they'll, you know, maybe can look for then again on their honeymoon in the place itself. So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's so many ways to think about a cheese board and to get creative. So for me, that is the real joy. It takes you to these other destinations sometimes before you even set foot on the soil.
It's interesting, this playfulness and this theming. Are there things like, you know, it's really fun actually. So it's pretty wide. You can start, you know, so it's things, it could be, I suppose, appearance of cheese, it could be seasonality, it could be, or you could be sort of, I don't know, you could be sort of evoking the Mediterranean. I mean, I presume there's, once you start riffing, there are lots of things, lots of directions you can go in then.
Right. I do some consulting for a restaurant group here in Philadelphia. And a couple years ago, we did island wines and just island cheeses. And that was a delight because, of course, there's Sicily and Sardinia. But then you think, there's cheeses made on the Canary Islands.
Yeah.
And it gets very fun to suddenly
and the island of Ireland.
And see,
fantastic.
You know, it was a way for us to help guests, you know, island hop through cheese and wine at a table, you know, without traveling at all, but in their mouths they were traveling.
Yeah, well, it's which is the joy of, it's that transporting quality, isn't it, that food has, which is so wonderful. And did you when you became interested in cheese, did you have good cheese board experiences? Was there something that stimulated you? That, you know, did you go to a restaurant and think, wow, that was amazing? And then did that sort of spark the interest?
The interest was sparked actually by walking into an incredible cheese shop here in Philadelphia when I moved here about 15 years ago. It was a cheese shop called De Bruno Brothers. It's very well known.
It's classic. And yes, and I've interviewed. Yes, they featured on A Slice of Cheese, which is a joy. And I think from series one, she's thinking back. It's an amazing place, isn't it? I mean, it just sounded amazing. Sorry, I say that as someone in London has not been, but it's like, wow, it sounded phenomenal. So.
It's this little shop, you know, with salamis hanging from the ceiling and, you know, rows of Goudas on shelves and Parmigianos. And then there was, you know, there were these cases and they told me they had around 350 cheeses. I had no idea at that moment in my life that there were 350 cheeses. And so I said to myself, I'm going to start a personal project where I eat every single cheese in this shop. And because I'm a writer by training and I'd worked as a journalist, I thought, I'm going to start a little cheese blog about this and I'm going to record all of the cheeses as I eat them. And that is what I called it, Madame Fromage. It was a bit of a joke, but it really, you know, I ate all of the cheeses. It took me about 3 years.
Yeah,
and copious notes, and the cheesemongers gave me the most wonderful suggestions for pairings. And it was really just like a 3 year self-study, a sort of PhD in cheese that I gave myself with the help of the Brin Brothers owners and cheesemongers. It was
Emilio I am interviewing. He was so lovely. He was amazing.
Yeah, we were great friends.
So yeah, how nice. Oh, say hi from me.
Sure. Yeah. So, going from being just an ordinary customer to a collaborator, we ended up writing a book together. I ended up writing a bunch of cheese signage for the shop.
Wonderful.
Because I just love the language around cheese and the play.
That's actually quite interesting. Do you think, in order to put together a good cheese board, would you advise people to go to a cheese shop because of the scope it offers them? Is that something that's important?
I think so, yes. Yeah. Because it's so exciting to walk in the door and just say, oh, you know, what's new or what's seasonal or what did you take home last night? I always like to get a bit nosy with the person not behind the counter, especially if I don't know the selection or I'm not familiar with it, because I know they're tasting everything and I know they're playing with these cheeses at home. So I love the inside scoop. I love a recommendation, or I love to say, you know, hey, I have a fabulous new bottle of gin. I'm looking for a special pairing with some great gin and tonics tonight, just to see what they'll recommend.
I mean, that is the joy, isn't it? Like when, you know, a good cheese shop and the staff who are keen and they love that. You know, nothing's nicer than a cheese conversation with, you know, a customer who loves cheese and a cheesemonger who loves telling you about the cheese. And it's just a great exchange, isn't it, of interest, I suppose, that shared interest. And it's a great connective thing.
It is. I feel like it's actually a community service. What they do. Because often when they make wonderful recommendations for restaurants or things happening in the city, they tend to be really in the know. So I always say whenever I travel, the first thing I do is look for the independent cheese shop. Then I, you know, I'm able to get some cheeses for my hotel or wherever I'm staying. Plus, I always ask the cheesemongers about, you know, where to get the best coffee, where to go for dinner, if there are any good shows coming up.
Always have to sleep. That's what he's doing. Cheesemonger's Oracle. Excellent. Have you been to Neil's Yard Dairy in London? I don't know if you've
been. Yes, I have on a number of occasions. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely exquisite. And that is a cheese counter where I love to go in and just say, oh, you know, can you just taste me through some of your favorites? And just see what the cheesemonger recommends.
Yeah, and they're always, I do the same, because in fact, Neil's Yard have got this very admirable policy of actually, they give their customers tastings of the cheese, because the cheese are farmhouse cheeses and they change, you know, batch to batch.
Yes.
So even though I might sort of think, oh, I know what Montgomery's cheddar is, but it's like, but you know, but I don't know what that batch is, and it'll be slightly, it'll be different, you know. So
right.
It's really interesting. So, and and it's just fascinating getting, you know, whoever's behind the counter will have the style, or you know, they'll have a pet cheese that they really want to champion, that they think is tasting wonderful that morning, you know. So, have you tried this? It's great. You know, it's Martin Gott's latest cheese. It's really good. Have you tried it? So it's just fun, isn't it?
No. It is. And I love your phrase, Jenny, of a pet cheese. What's your pet cheese? It's like I want a pet cheese on my desk.
Yeah. You know, something you feel really affectionate towards and fond of. I mean, I do think, isn't it funny? I think, you know, you and I obviously share a love of cheese tonight, hence us talking about this on a cheese podcast. And I'm a food writer, not a cheese writer, but cheese is for a long time, it's been one of those foods that's really fascinated me, and I have written about it, and it's just this very rich world. And I think, I suppose that's the whole point of this podcast, is trying to say to people, cheese is fascinating, isn't it? It's varied, it's diverse, there's bound to be something you like, you know, you might not like blue, but you will like something else, you know, and explore it, because it's very rich. And I suppose, in fact, to go back to the cheese board thing that we started with, do you think, so when you invite people around and give them a cheese board, do you have that excitement of seeing, you know, people try, perhaps be pushed out of their comfort zone, but they try something to be polite to you, and then they're like, wow, that was amazing. Does that happen?
All the time. In fact, I love to know, like, are there any cheeses that you are averse to? And then if they say something like, oh, goat's milk, or oh, I'm not so into blues, then I feel like it's a little personal challenge to help them find a delightful path into one of those realms. I absolutely love that. Or I love to say, you know, is there anything you want to drink or anything you want to play around with in terms of a pairing on the board, you know, whether it's chocolate or maybe they want to have an interesting digestif after dinner with an interesting cheese. For me, it's like I love the challenge of the hunt. I love to know when someone is intrigued by cheese-wise or you know, or afraid of. And then I love to like hunt for the things that's going to surprise and delight them.
And you mentioned accompaniments, you know, things, you know, you've talked about drinking gin with cheese and so again, you're thinking of the cheese board. So would you enjoy, so other elements, okay, what are some things that you enjoy putting on a cheese board then, Tanaya?
Just to reference the gin, I love spirits and cheese. Cocktails and cheese is often something that I serve just to surprise people, because most people expect wine, but it's really fun to surprise them with a French 75, with an old fashioned, and then a delicious cheese board to go with it. So that's one of the things that I love to do. Otherwise, I love to play with different jams or curds, like a lemon curd with a goat cheese, I think can sometimes be surprising for someone, especially if it's on an Oaty biscuit or like a graham cracker. I love using interesting dried fruits that maybe they wouldn't have typically seen, like dried oranges, even dried pineapple with something like a gouda. A dried pineapple can be really nice to play off those slightly tropical notes sometimes you get. Oh, what else? Certainly nuts and interesting crackers and things like that. Recently, I did a cheese board with some champagne jelly. I always try to have one thing on the board that's a little bit intriguing, just like that conversation piece cheese.
Excellent. Gosh, okay, tonight, I'm now, you know, you've made me, I'm now craving cheese, so that's, it's totally worked. And luckily, strangely enough, I have some in my fridge, so that's good. In fact, which I need to then take out and bring to room temperature. Oh, well, tonight, thank you so much. That's been a lovely insight into, in a way, the fun and excitement of exploring cheese. So thank you so much.
I'm so glad. My pleasure, Jenny. Thank you so much.
Online, on smart speakers, and on Listen Again. This is Food FM.
This week on A Slice of Cheese, very happy to have with me today Claire Stiles, Head of Marketing at Peter's Yard. Peter's Yard, as listeners to this podcast will know, are our sponsors. Hello, Claire.
Hello.
Claire, this week, for this episode of A Slice of Cheese, we're looking at cheese boards, which is something that people are always really interested in knowing how to put them together. And of course, one aspect of that cheese board is, what do you pair with cheese? And, you know, and cheese and crackers, it's classic, isn't it? So tell me, say, Peter's Yard, tell me about, you're known for your sourdough crackers, is that right? What was the, give me a little description of what the sort of starting point for Peter's Yard.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, you're right, our sourdough crackers are what we're known for. And we started off, gosh, sort of well over 10 years ago now with our original recipe, which is actually an authentic Swedish recipe. So we brought that over from Sweden. And it's a very simple product, so it just has 5 ingredients in it. And that makes it a great all-rounder to pair with lots of types of cheese. But the thing that makes us really unique, I guess, is the fact that we use sourdough in all of our recipes. So it's an integral part of what gives the crackers their character, both in terms of the texture and also just having a longer fermentation and slightly more depth of flavour than other crackers on the market.
Yes, I mean, fermentation, which is a very nice pairing with cheese, because obviously cheese is a fermented, you know, product too. So, you know, fermentation is used in cheese making. And you're right, and fermentation and thyme, which I know is another one of your ingredients, is that gives flavour often. And, you know, flavour can be subtle, but it's still flavour. I mean, it's interesting because I tried one of your crackers in your very early days at a Tasty at Fortnum's. And they look very simple and very plain, quite austere. Mm-hmm. And then when I bit it, I was like, wow, this has really got a flavour. It was nice. You know, it was like this lovely. I love the texture of your crackers because they're very fine, aren't they? And I really like that, which I think is also nice, because I think that's good with cheese, because that's really nice for sort of a generous cheese to cracker ratio. So it doesn't get swamped by the texture of the cracker, which I think works really well too.
Yeah. So our crackers, really, I mean, they're crisp bread originally from Sweden, and it is really a form of bread. So I guess it's similar in that way, that it's got that, you know, very versatile flavour. It can go with lots of different things. And like you said, on the surface, it's very simple. But because of that fermentation, you kind of uncover this depth of flavour as you eat. And our original product, which you're referring to, definitely has a really nice maltiness.
That
sort of has developed over the time. A bit almost like a toastiness, like as if you'd made a slice of toast with some sourdough bread.
Yep, that's right. It's very appealing. And but I know that over the years you've added in flavours. You know, you've got flavoured crisps. Tell us about those. And did you think of them? Did Peter Ziard see them as going well with different types of cheeses?
Yes, absolutely. So that's always been our starting point whenever we've done recipe development in our crackers range. Just because the original recipe, like we said, goes so well with cheese, we kind of have always thought of that as a natural pairing for our crackers. So when we've come to develop them, we've thought of particular styles of cheeses and flavours that balance or contrast well with those. So one of our kind of early products and still one of our best sellers is our fig and spelt crackers. So that's, you know, you expect to eat fig with cheese, wouldn't you, anyway?
Yes.
But it adds a lovely sweetness to the product.
That's very nice with blue cheese, isn't it? If we're thinking of Christmas cheese board and Stilton inevitably, and that must go very well. I mean, you're using dried figs in the crackers.
Yes, we are. Yes. And then there's some honey as well, just to sort of bring out that lovely sweetness, which, as you say, just works really well against a blue cheese because they're naturally got that nice sort of saltiness and tanginess. So definitely always on the Christmas cheese board with a Stilton.
Yeah, perfect. I mean, I think what I like about the way you flavoured your crackers is that even though the flavours are there, they're not too in your face. So, which again, that's the reason I like that is I think that goes well with cheese because you want to be able to taste the cheese. You don't want a cracker that's so dominant that you can't taste the cheese.
The cheese is always the hero.
That's interesting. That was a conscious decision, I'm guessing, on your developing these recipes. That's your style.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we're all such fans at Peter's Yard of amazing artisan cheeses that we have in this country. The last thing we'd want to do is kind of obliterate them with really strong flavours. So it's all about enhancing those cheeses and bringing out, you know, the subtleties in them. So we like to have that flavour, but it's always subtle and it's something that just, enhances whatever cheese you pair with the cracker.
And tell us some of the other flavoured crackers that you make and give us some ideas of what might be a nice pairing with them.
Yeah, so another one that could be quite nice at Christmas, I guess, is our pink peppercorn crackers. They've got a lovely gentle spice from the peppercorns, so they work really well with sort of nice soft bloomy cheeses if you've got a Camembert or a Brie on your Christmas cheese board. And also that spice is lovely with truffles, so if you're going for a kind of truffled Brie or something for Christmas.
Johnny Crickmore at Fen Farm Dairy makes this wonderful truffled Baron Bigod, which is the sort of British version of Brie. I mean, those truffled cheeses are really, they're really indulgent in the most amazing way. So, yes, definitely a Christmas treat. So,
we've got a rosemary and sea salt, which was one of our more recent products we developed last year. So that's, I mean, typically we say is really nice with fresher cheese styles, but it's also lovely with a goat's cheese if that's something people are exploring for their Christmas cheese board. It's just that nice sort of herbaceous flavour from the rosemary. Works really well with goat's cheeses, I think.
Yes, how nice. And so you've got a charcoal.
We've got, it's a Ryan charcoal. So the charcoal's there really just to add that striking black colour, which, again, adds some drama to a Christmas cheese board, for sure. But it's got a slightly softer texture than some of the other products in our range because it's also got butter in the recipe. So that's just a nice contrast to add with different styles of cheeses. And that works well, again, with those kind of softer cheeses like a Brie or Camembert. And it's also really lovely with sort of more traditional territorial British crumbly cheeses like Lancashire's or Wensleydale.
I'm glad you're mentioning those. Yes, they're lovely, lovely cheeses, you know, perhaps less well-known in a way in Britain than they used to be, I think. But and of course, Wensleydale's a massive Christmas bestseller. So, and when it was interesting, when I talked to Andy Swinscoe, who's the cheesemonger from Yorkshire, but those are the cheeses that he sells in Yorkshire. It's perhaps not surprising. They outsell Stilton for him because that's what people want.
Want
them. Yeah, it's really interesting. And they want them, it's a pairing with fruitcake. That's a very classic Yorkshire pairing.
Yeah.
So actually, those cheese would actually be nice with your fig and spelt. They say would be a bit of lovely bit of sort of delicate crumbly Lancashire or Wensleydale. You know, these gentler cheeses that are very much part of our British tradition, but an absolute joy to eat, I think.
Yeah, no, they definitely would be. And that's one thing, you know, we come up with these products with pairings in mind, but we very much encourage people to be creative and test out different combinations of cheese and crackers and find out pairings that work for them. So I think that sounds fantastic, trying a Wensleydale with the fig.
Are you quite careful when you add a flavour to the range? I mean, do you do a lot of... It's got to work, I'm guessing, because you want it to last, don't you? It's not about... You're not jumping... The impression I get from your company is you don't leap onto fashion bandwagons as such. You know, you're not doing a kimchi... Well, maybe you are. I don't know. Peter's, yeah. So do you... Is it something you think about quite carefully then when you're coming up with a new addition to the range?
Yes, it definitely is. And I think we definitely... You're right, we don't sort of jump on trends as such. We look at, you know, classic combinations that work and that pair well. And like I said, enhance or bring out the cheese. I mean, there are flavours that we have explored in the past that people are, you know, don't work so well or they don't sell well. So we had a really delicious caraway cracker, actually.
Oh,
that
yes,
was one
I
of
like
my
caraway.
Favourites. Yeah.
Oh no, and it's gone, is it? Not enough well, people like caraway then.
Yeah, it's quite a divisive flavour, I think.
Yeah, it is quite, you're
though,
right.
Yeah, with certain styles of cheeses, it was just absolutely delicious.
Would that have been nice with sort of mountain cheeses? Would you have had...
Yes,
what did you,
yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Ah, Alpine
those
style.
Kind of slightly
lovely.
Stronger style, stronger yes. flavour cheeses.
And they've got that sort of salty, sweet, nutty... Yeah, there's a real fullness of flavour to them, which I'm getting the caraway quite nice, quite refreshing, would cut through it.
Yes, yeah, exactly. But no, it didn't sell, so we had to remove that from the range.
Did it's you buy all the last... Did you just stock up on everything? It's sweep in and go, I'll take that, and just get your stash. Yeah,
one of the job.
And so at Christmas, Claire, would you yourself be... Is the fun for you, of do you enjoy putting together a cheese board yourself?
Yes, I do. I absolutely love... love cheese, and I always try to go British, I think, wherever possible, just because we have such amazing British cheeses.
Yes,
why go
we
further
do.
Afield?
And that's what's really interesting. Yes, and we've got the such a range of, and so many people making new British cheeses, you know, so that if it's a really wide, yeah, there's lots and lots of choice out there. And I mean, obviously, I think Christmas people, it's, you know, it's very tempting to go for the classics because you know that you love a Stilton or a good cheddar, and it's lovely to have them. But it is also fun to try something new because there are these great talented cheesemakers out there, and they need, you know, and it's worth supporting them because then they will become the established cheese, you know, makers down if they get a chance. If people buy what they're making, they'll still be
definitely.
There.
Definitely, yeah. It's always fun to experiment, but like you said, there are those classics, I think, that you feel you've got to always have as part of your Christmas cheese board as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting time because Christmas is, you know, a lot of it is about traditions. There's things that they're dishes that I make for that my family would be really cross with me if I didn't produce them. If I didn't make my chestnut stuffing, I think my son wouldn't bother coming round. So, yes. But, yeah, no, lovely. Oh, well, Claire, thank you. That's made me, yes, yearn to get a cheese board and start nibbling. So, thank you. That was a lovely insight. Take care then, Claire. Thank you.
Oh, good. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you. Bye, Claire.
To find out more about Food FM and our content, go to foodfmradio.com.
Enhance your cheese board with Peter's Yard sourdough crackers this Christmas. Available at Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Morrison's, Ocado, Amazon, petersyard.com and specialist food retailers.
Thank you so much for listening to A Slice of Cheese. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have enjoyed it, it would be lovely if you could rate us on wherever you found this podcast. It will make such a difference to us. So I hope you'll enjoy us again. Thank you very much.